Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packerman. Oi! No slingering at the back. In association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's been a good week on Planet Albion. First, Jorginho's injury time equaliser at Spurs broke the locals and Roberto De Zerbi's heart in their quest to stay up. And then, on Tuesday, Chelsea were steamrolling us in a pantomime atmosphere as the wheels came off their clown car and we made it 6 wins in 8. However, both games, the media narrative was all about the opposition, with Brighton hardly garnering a mention. So perhaps, then, it will be a surprise to the mainstream media outlets when they look at the league table this morning and wonder, how the hell did Brighton get to sixth as our European quest gathers pace? We now face another break in the fixtures with our trip to Newcastle over a week away, and the table may well look a little bit different by the next time we kick a ball in anger. But we are top of the form table currently, and momentum is growing. Europe again, anybody? Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome a Raw Virgin. Yes, because we love those. It's the Sussex Express sports reporter, Sam Morton. Hello, Sam.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, we've been asking you for a while.
Yeah, I know this will be the first and the last, I think.
Very nice.
But
what have we done to deserve the this is the last time I'll be on the Raw?
No, I think once you've heard how useless I am, I think you just wouldn't want to have me again. No, I'm joking. No, it's great to be on. Really, really appreciate it.
Does Sussex Express know that they've got a ringer then?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, all right. But you still managed to pull it off.
Obviously, as it's your debut, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your Albion supporting history?
Yeah, no. So I've been a reporter with Sussex World Group since 2018, and I've been covering Brighton for most of that time. Really, I've been obviously in and out of the football world because I do cover a lot of the news as well. But yeah, try and do as much as the sport as I can as well to support the sport team for Brighton and bits of Crawley Town and other sports as well. So it's always been really good fun, and covering Albion has just been incredible. Obviously, had the chance to go to Europe with them, obviously to Amsterdam and Rome, which was incredible. And it looks like it could be on the horizon again with the form that they're in. And certainly didn't see that coming only a few months ago when everything was only heading one way and some really poor results and just struggling for consistency. And now it's been brilliant the last few months. It's really turned on its head, and the players have clearly really got behind the manager and the fans that were calling for Fabian Hurst to go. He's certainly not been hearing much of that in the last few weeks. So it's been really great to see. And just being able to cover Brighton through their glory years in the last few years has been brilliant, really. It's been fantastic.
I mean, the narrative has completely changed from the Palace game, hasn't it? And the Everton games as well, where there was so much negativity around, and everyone was looking over the shoulders nervously and thinking that we could be in a relegation fight.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think I just think back to Crystal Palace, and that game was as low and as down as the atmosphere I've ever seen at the Amex, to be honest. And it was just such a poor performance, and just nothing seemed to go right on the day. They never really looked like scoring. And obviously the fans were chanting for Fabian's job in the morning, kind of thing. It was quite sad to hear that. You don't like to see fans chanting for their own manager to be sacked, but you can completely understand with the form they were in at the time and the manner of their defeat to the biggest rivals. It was understandable. But the way they've managed to turn things around and to really pick themselves up and to get to where they are now is quite incredible. And obviously we'll talk about the recent results and how they've got here. But it is quite remarkable how quickly things can change in football, and some of the players that have come back into form. I think we saw some really good performances from Jorginho and Carlos Baleba against Chelsea, who are two players in particular that have struggled. And I think that's really helped as well, is getting kind of your top quality players back into form, back into fitness, and that can only be a good thing, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about the events with Chelsea and subsequently Liam losing his job today as we record this. But I mean, like you said, I mean, the fans at the Amex were calling for Liam's head last night. They were quite vociferous in that. In fact, actually, the Albion fans' response was that he's one of our own, and he is, Al.
I mean, there is that element of trolling. When I first heard it, I thought my first thought was genuinely that actually, well, they're saying we won, he's one of our own, and but under the circumstances and given the context, you can't help feeling it was also a bit of trolling. I'm gonna go along the lines. I think it was genuine love for him, and I've got all the time in the world for Liam Rossignol. He's a thoughtful, intelligent, progressive, articulate footballer, which is pretty rare these days. Who was absolutely dumped on by Bluco, whose lust, pitiful lust for world domination, just meant that he was a naive pawn in their feeble game. I mean, the next person, whoever it might be, the next person is going to suffer the same indignity. You know, what have they got to turn round? It's a systemic club-wide issue that's evident. You've got people at the top not knowing what they're doing, people at the bottom seemingly not caring. And it's always the manager that bears the brunt of it. And let's rewind those couple of months to those that were shouting for Hertzler's thing. And again, for me, where at Brighton it usually works and Chelsea it clearly isn't, it's a club-wide systemic thing. And to call for the departure of one person, when actually if there is a problem, it's not going to be down to one person unless it's the fella at the top. It's kind of grating. So for those who did call for it and doing it during the game, oh, it just grinds me gears. But doing, I mean, booing after the game is one thing, but doing it during the game, where it really helped in this case, of all people, Crystal Palace. I'd love to know the mindset of those who booed then, what they think now. Are they really going to be stuck in their ways, be that belligerent and say, no, I still believe that Hertzler should go, even though we're on the cusp of getting another European berth? Or are they going to say, yeah, I was a bit hasty there?
Well, I mean, I said it at the time, particularly with our penchant for late goals, to start from calling the team out in the 80th minute, it's just preposterous.
Well,
I mean, we
even
weren't
in
playing great. We might still be playing now and not scoring that game, but it was just, you know. Anyway, let's move on. I mean, like, you know, Chelsea's quest for world domination, normally you have to build a rocket or take you to the moon. They just built a clown car.
Yeah, it's that. I mean, if we want to go down that particular sort of automotive route, then yeah, the motorway hasn't been built. There is no plan as to how to do it. The car is a Datsun Chery, or even maybe, I don't know, a Morris Marina. And there's I don't know, a blind person driving it. It's
Yeah,
there.
but what have
There's
the
a
Romans ever
pitiful.
done for us, Al? That's what I'd say. Right, let's move on because we've got a lot to get through. So let's rewind to last Saturday evening at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Sam, they were trying. Spurs were. It was obviously it's a big game, and there's a they are the big story at the moment. And it's you know they've got a big battle to go out there. Obviously, it was us going against our old gaffer as well with Roberto. But they tried to make the atmosphere like a cup final. I had all their flags out and everything, and it was quite raucous, wasn't it?
It was. The atmosphere was great at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Really, I did really, really enjoy the game. There's some really kind of entertaining moments in it, and it was really great to see De Zerbi back in the Premier League, to be honest. And his antics and his emotional kind of
He's a
scenes you see from
maniac.
him on the
Sam, just
touchline.
admit it, he's a maniac.
He is a bit of a maniac, but I love his kind of the way that he responds and the emotion that he shows. I think he's great. I think
His energy.
obviously that's one thing that's kind of been said about Fabian Hertzler is he's kind of complete opposite, and they're both brilliant in their own ways, and they both get reactions from the players in their own ways, and they both obviously get success out of
Sorry, can I
that.
cut across you, Sam? Wasn't
Yeah.
it supposed to be the case that when Fabian turned up initially, that he was actually even more manic? On the touchline than De Zerbi. That would seem to be the reputation. And I suspect
Yeah.
he's gathered in pretty much more yellow cards than De Zerbi ever
That's
did.
a very good point. It's a very good point. Yeah.
And yet, De Zerbi is the one that's, oh yeah, he's got so much passion. Fabian's got none. What, really? It's either that he's got a motor mouth in front of the fourth official.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I think Fabian, obviously, when you hear him in press conferences, is quite straight to the point and doesn't say anything too derogatory. Obviously, we've had the times when he's gone in and rant against Arsenal style of play, which I really enjoyed. It's one of my favourite press conferences
I think everyone did.
through the last couple of years. But yeah, no, I think it was great to see De Zerbi back, and it was nice to see him go over to the fans at the end of the game, despite the way that it ended for Spurs. Conceding that late sucker punch and in the way that they did, because it did seem like they were all set for their first win of 2026 in the league. Mm. So to concede so late like they did, and you felt it was coming just from how mentally fragile they are. And they did play well, and they scored two good goals. But you just felt there was always that kind of part that missing from their yeah. mental stability, and you felt Brighton were always going to get back into it. But fair play to De Zerbi. He came over to the Brighton fans and applauded them, and they chanted his name in response as well. So yeah. that was really, really good to see. And I do think De Zerbi has definitely got some improvement, obviously, in terms of the way the Spurs were playing, and they were clearly up for it. You can't accuse them of downing tools or anything like that.
I mean, when at the start of the game, and they were playing with an intensity which the Spurs fans haven't necessarily seen all season, actually. So yes, it was, and 100%. You know, They were pressing high. They were closing down the passing lanes. They were absolutely everywhere, and you could see that there was actually a plan. And it was, you know, I mean, one of those plans was possibly targeting Bart Bruggen. Did you see that?
Yeah. So do you know what? I think that's something they picked up on the Match of the Day analysis as well. I think when they've conceded goals, Brighton through trying to play out, and there was obviously one where he passed it to Van Hek, and they just put him under so much pressure, gave him under no time to find a pass, and obviously nicked the ball off him. Bergvall obviously got the ball and then gave it to Simmons, who was a superb goal, to be honest. There's not a lot the keeper could have done. But I do see sometimes they do try and exploit that, try and get onto the defenders, and before they can even find the pass and play through them, which is a tactic that clearly worked on that occasion. But fair play to Van Hekker as well. I think the way that he was obviously at fault for that goal, but went up the other end and got the assist for the equaliser was brilliant, and just again proved the mentality of him as a player. And I suppose Fabian after the game mentioned that moment, and he was full of praise from him as well. Just kind of typifies everything that he wants to have in a central defender. And I know there's been plenty of talk about Van Hekker potentially not signing a new contract and whatnot, but if Brighton can keep hold of him, then they really need to, because he's crucial. But as we know, Albion are a selling club, and if an offer of a substantial offer comes in that's suitable, then he probably will leave. But I think Brighton fans will enjoy every last game they have with him, however long that will be.
No, I mean, he's not bad as a striker either, is he, actually?
But, no.
I mean, but it's like, I mean, with a year left in his contract and with the way that the club is run, I can't see him sticking around if he's not going to sign that contract. We can't afford to let him go for nothing, I would imagine. But, I mean, he's just one of those players, though. He was a slow burner initially, but I mean, he's just the improvement in him, and it's just his mentality and the way that he cajoles the rest of the team, the way he's a leader on the pitch. And you see the videos after the games, and you see him in the dressing room and how he's the first to speak up. And you know, if he was to go, it'd be a massive miss.
Yeah, 100%. No, he's obviously gained invaluable experience from slotting in alongside Lewis Dunk, and those two have really formed a formidable partnership. But to be fair, obviously with Dunk being suspended and Oliver Piscagli coming in alongside him, he's been brilliant as well. A lot of credit needs to go to Piscagli as well for his performances in the last couple of games. But I think Van Hek has become that leader, so where he's been learning under Dunk, I think now the younger players can even learn from Van Hek, and he's clearly a quick learner. He's clearly a manager's dream in terms of everything he brings to the team. And yeah, you kind of just see that confidence in him, that you can bring the ball up the field and can have an impact in the attacking moves as well. And yeah, none more so than that assist that he got against Spurs, and using his strength to hold off the tackle and then find the perfect pass.
One thing I find hilarious about all the sort of the talk, and let's face it, we are starting to enter the silly season of so-and-so's been linked with so-and-so, and there will be still kids out there on social media, you know, pretending to be in the know, and I'm looking at you, Romano, as well, is, all right, Van Hekker may or may not go. He may or may not sign a contract. We don't know. We're not in the room. But what I would say is when you then get a lot of fabricated reports, including looking to go to a big club, Spurs are interested in him. Now, there's obviously no way he is going to go to Spurs if they go down. But, you know, the fact that he's linked to Spurs, it's just right, okay, Brighton player, they're a selling club. It's almost tick boxing. It's almost like, you know, silly season bingo. Right, Brighton player, done well, bought for sod all. gone through the system, etc., etc. Right, he's going to Spurs, he's going to Liverpool, he's going to Man City. They're all interested in him, and the figure is going to be such and such, which incidentally is always a fabrication. Is even Paul Cameron has come onto this show and actually said they have a number at the club as to what the figure might be, and I suspect, being a selling club, that it will be higher than a lot of clubs would expect. But, you know, it's expected to fetch X million or whatever it might be. And, of course, Tony Bloom's got no such truck with that kind of thing. And it's just nauseatingly tedious. I'm not... The fact that you're reading all these various clubs, arbitrary clubs, are interested in Jan-Paul van Hekkel. Frankly, every single club in the Premier League should be interested in him. Whether he's going to go there or whether he's interested in going there is another matter. Frankly, as one of the best defenders in the division, every single club should be interested in him.
Well, not just in this division, in Europe, in the world.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But what I mean is it's the Premier League that are, one, at home, and two, can offer the big bucks. Unless it's Madrid, Barcelona or Munich. So... Yeah, it's one of those things that he hasn't signed a new contract yet, et cetera, et cetera. And like I say, as you pointed out, AD, he's still got another year to run. So, you know, I'm not putting out I'm not scared just yet about it. And I'm sure he'll fulfil that contract unless someone does come in for him. But it's just oddly enough that that's particular Spurs game were ones where, yeah, he made up for it, but he did drop two rickets, albeit one was clearly down to him. But another one, which I'm sure we'll come on to in a sec, in my opinion, was actually down to others as well.
Yeah. Okay. But one player who's been instrumental with the Albion of late is Diego Gomez. Now, he went down very early in the game. He landed absolutely. I just watched it again today, and it looks absolutely. It's horrible.
It looked like
it might be the end for him and his World Cup dreams. But it looks like the prognosis isn't as bad as we first feared.
Well, who knows?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to say, who
sorry,
knows?
Go ahead.
Again, we're not in the room, we're not medically trained, and you know, he's still got to have another scan, or if he hasn't already. So I'm sure we'll get some news at whenever the next presser is, which is actually, Sam, is probably not till the middle of next week, is it?
Yeah, no, it'd be a while now because obviously the game that was going to be at the weekend was obviously moved forward. So obviously no games this weekend. So a bit of a wait to find out. But before the game, Hertzler said Diego won't be available to face Chelsea. But it's quite positive news. It's not as bad as expected. Hopefully it's not an injury that keeps him out for months. It's not a big injury. Hopefully it'll be weeks rather than months. Something with his knee. We made a scan and a rescan, and it's not as bad as some expect it to be. And there's obviously really good news that Matoma as well was fit enough to play against Chelsea, because we weren't entirely sure after he went off after coming on against Spurs. But that seems to just be cramp. So that was good news. And hopefully there's nothing serious for Diego Gomez, because he's been really, really important player for Brighton and really coming into his own and getting more confidence as the season has progressed. And obviously we'll have dreams of playing in the World Cup as well. So on a personal basis for him, I really hope that he can at least be fit enough for that, even if he's not to make it for the rest of the season for Brighton.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, another player, Al, that has come back into the team this year is Pascal Gross. I personally think he's been a bit of a slow burner. I used that phrase
about Van Hekker just now as well.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm looking at barbecues all day. So. But I don't think he's necessarily hit the heights that he had previously now, but the last two or three weeks he's really beginning to find his stride, and some of the balls he's putting in at the moment are just absolutely sumptuous.
Well, that's what we got him back for, frankly, was actually the quality of the crossing coming in, and I know obviously that led to the goal, and let's face it, Chelsea didn't watch that Spurs game clearly in the first few minutes. But I think what I've also noticed in Pascal Gross, which maybe I just didn't realise it, because there's times when Pascal Gross hit the heights, but there are other times, and I think people might even forget this, yes, his figures look great, but one, he's very slow, and two, there were times where he could have absolute stinkers, and you think, crikey, this fella is way better than this, and he probably sets himself a high bar. But what I've noticed this time round, and certainly again the last few games, is how much more aggressive he is. When I say aggressive, I don't mean violent, although it is more down that road rather than the trying to be strong. I mean, I know we're talking about the Chelsea game, but he looked like he wanted to start a fight with everyone in that team. And I think on the back of that, that actually then sets him up as a leader. He's still got another year after this one, hasn't he? Or is it two? I lose track. It'll take him to the age of 73.
It was an 18-month contract he signed.
Yeah, that was it. Yes, you're quite right. Yeah. So Gross is... But also, I think possibly in the absence of someone like Milner, because I still kind of thinking that our central midfield is still pretty inexperienced. So he has a lot to carry for the rest of that midfield. And I think that possibly I'd argue he plays better alongside James Milner, but because then Gross can go about and do his thing. But let's say for both the Spurs game and for the Chelsea game, Gross was, he covered every blade of the pitch. You think, well, hang on, where are you playing? Are you in central midfield? Yeah. What are you doing over on the left wing there? Shouldn't someone else? That kind of thing. He was there. He's there. He's here. He's there. He's everywhere. But I'm not going to say it as if it was Roy Kent.
Yeah. But Sam, one such opportunity for him to show his skills, as it were, was a free kick, which was about 40 yards from goal. Bissouma got booked for bringing down Ayari. And I'm convinced it must have been a training ground move, because it was like the way that he put that ball in for Danny Welbeck. I mean, Welbeck really should have done better with the header. It was a good save in the end. But it's just that ball and the timing of the run for the header was just brilliant.
Yeah, no, he's such a naturally gifted footballer is Pascal Gross, and not, it's not even just that. I think it's his ability to kind of make plays around him better as well. I think that's something which Fabian Hertz has spoken about recently as well. He's a very good leader. He's a very good personality. And I think it's quite a rare thing to have, is that kind of skill to kind of improve players around them. And I think he must constantly be barking orders to his teammates and obviously getting the best out of them in training and behind closed doors and everything like that. And just having someone like him to learn from and to kind of improve your own game based on what he's doing is fantastic. And just the number of assists that he's got in a Brighton shirt is unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And you just know that he's going to find that right pass. And obviously, as you mentioned, it was deja vu, really, for Matoma, where he put it on a plate for him. That's not on a plate, because his goal against Spurs was an unbelievable volley. So I wouldn't necessarily on a plate, because he has so much to do still. But
for
it
Matoma,
was still a quality
for Matoma, that's a big plate, believe me.
Yeah, well, exactly that. And I thought it was going to happen again when it landed straight in the same place for him. And he obviously just didn't quite connect with it as he would have wanted.
It was identical.
You think? I mean, if anyone, I know that obviously we'll get onto the Chelsea thing later in the second half of the show, but if ever there was anyone going to get upset with Chelsea's defending, it was going to be that, on account of the fact you think, hang on, this happened 3 days ago. Didn't you watch it? Didn't you see what happened?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. Yeah, they didn't obviously learn at all from.
Wouldn't have been just a good performance. It would have been funny.
But I mean, there was a couple of opportunities there. There was the one that where Minto put the ball to the far stick, where Hinch was lurking, but his header hit the post, and Welbs couldn't turn it in. And obviously, that chance that Welbs had with the header. If one of those chances go in, I'm convinced we'd all see a completely different storyline in the game.
I don't disagree. Can I just take you up on the free kick you were talking about just now? I think you're being a little bit harsh on Danny Welbeck, because if nothing else, the ball was slightly behind him. It's not as though he ran onto it. It's almost he had to check his run and sort of crane his neck. Now, the likes of Ulloa, you know, and the muscles in his neck, yeah, he might have done something about it. I don't know. But I think you're being a little bit harsh. And that's for the other one where, you know, it was actually the defender that knocked it against the post, not Welbeck. For some reason, and this is what I can't get my head around, is then the linesman stuck his flag up. You think, well, no one was offside there. What are you doing? But
it was a weird.
Let's put it this way. If it had gone in, I'm certain it would have been overturned.
I mean, it was one of those things. I mean, whisper it, but the ref had a good game.
Actually, I was going to mention this. We were talking about this last night. For all the build-up we had, and obviously on our WhatsApp group, you know, oh my God, Stuart Atwell and Jared Gillett in VAR. What could go? And let's face it, VAR, barely needed. There's certainly nothing to really sort of stop and look at. And Stuart Atwell was not falling for Spurs' gravity whoredom. And let's face it, and this is kind of something I found kind of interesting, Spurs fans scream for everything. I mean, mate, do we do it? I'm not sure, but they screamed for everything.
Anytime they did.
Go on, score it, Sam. Yeah.
It was no, it was quite remarkable actually. I think in that first 15, 20 minutes, it was like every time a Spurs player went down, they were going absolutely mad. And it was Weaver that seemed to be the guy that was doing it quite a lot of the time, and they were obviously trying to get everything they could get. But it was also a similar thing at Burnley as well. I remember they were really kind of angry at some of Brighton's antics and the fans really getting into the Brighton players. It just felt like a rinse and repeat of that, where the Brighton players really getting under the skin of the opposition with kind of their antics for different reasons. But I thought that always helps, I think, if you try and frustrate the opponent and things like that, it can only help.
But I mean, going back to what I was saying a minute ago, I mean, Sam, do you think that if one of those early chances that we had goes in, I think if we score first, I think we go on and win the game comfortably. I think.
It could, yeah. You never know with football. It can check one goal changes the game, doesn't it? Really, and Spurs getting the opening goal, yeah, it just completely changed it from that point of view. And I think Brighton did well then to actually get back into it, because Spurs very easily could have gone 2-0 up, and they should have done. I think with the chance that Xavi Simons had, he might have been offside anyway, but he did a nice little turn to get space for himself and then hit the post. And you thought that was, I think it was then Porro that came in and obviously had the shot over the bar. But that easily could have been 2-0, and then it's a different story for Brighton trying to
Again,
get back
different
into the
narrative
game.
again,
So I think Brighton did really well to get back into it, especially with you consider the tension of it all. It's one of the most tense atmospheres I've experienced, actually. Just you felt it was so important, every kick of the ball. And
What was it I
Spurs,
said to you with 10 minutes to go, AD? Because we're in the press box as well. So what was it I said to you? The sound you can hear, AD, is 55,000 Spurs fans cacking themselves.
I don't want to know what that sounds like.
Well, I smelt it. Believe me, I smelt it. So yeah, it's and yeah, you're quite right, Sam. It was tense, and you and I mean, and as AD said, with Brighton's penchant for scoring the last minute, I think we lead the table, as I understand it. I don't know about the stats. I don't care about the stats. But the point is that the team keeps going. We got a last minute goal, albeit wasn't the winner. We got a last minute goal against Burnley. We got that one in extra time in against Spurs. We got it in extra time against Chelsea. Yeah, we keep going. And there could have even been a winner even after Reuters winner, so, equaliser. So yeah, I like the fact that we keep going. And the irony of what you mentioned at the top of the show with the Everton game, where we conceded with the last kick of the game, that's just something that we've done to so many other teams this season. And I want to say that the footballing gods of fate sort of deserve that we got a stinky hand that particular day, but it happens, because as Sam said, that's football.
Now, Matoma's goal was being discussed at half time as possibly as being Van Basten-esque, and there's a few people that agreed with that. In fact, it was actually Fabian was asked the question, and he agreed with it as well after the game, didn't he?
High praise from a
But
German.
then, yeah. But in the scheme of where does that goal stand in the goal of the season competition, Sam? Would you vote? Are you voting Matoma or are you going Babis?
That's a good question. We had a conversation on this on the Sussex World podcast, actually, and it was Mark Dunford, who I worked with, was not having Babis's goal. He said we were just completely adamant that it was not a great connection, but we were fighting his corner, saying that he's a young lad scoring his first Premier League goal in that style was unbelievable, and to get a last minute equaliser as well was just the cherry on the cake for that one.
See what he did there.
But yeah, there you go. But I think with Matoma, I've got to go for him. He scored the goal of the season last year against Chelsea, funny enough, with that first touch of dreams, and then obviously curled it into the corner. This wasn't quite at that level. That's one of the best goals I've ever seen. This was superb for me. The way that he just managed to cushion it into the roof of the net, and every replay of it just got more and more unbelievable. Just and obviously the cross from Groves really adds to it as well. I think it was a fantastic goal, and I would give it goal of the season.
I'm still
Well,
going for
actually, I
I'm
mean
still going for, go on.
Henry Winter, he was posting about it, and he said, "This is Kurt Zouma's effort to retain his match of the day goal of the season title."
Yeah, I couldn't tell you what's better. If you're talking about Albion goal of the season, what is Diego Gomez's hat trick goal at Barnsley not in the reckoning, or has it got to be a league thing? Because I don't remember this being the rules.
Well, in our rules, in our competition at the end of the season, the League Cup's allowed, but generally speaking, it's
If it's Premier League, then of course it's Mitoma, because I'm not saying I'm not going to be as dismissive as Mark Dunford there, but what I would say is that a real bona fide overhead kick is one where you don't set it up yourself. In other words, it's your first touch. With Babis, he got it under control, which is sort of he managed to get it straight up in the air, which was, kind of a feat in itself. And then he gets it. Yeah, I think he actually gets a better connection than your colleague is actually.
You're being harsh there. I
No,
think
no, it's what I'm saying. No, that's the only reason is that it's the difference is that fine margin between it being Kostoulis and it being Mitoma is the fact that Mitoma's one was hit first time.
Okay. Well, it was, the Spurs did take the lead again and again. We mentioned this a little bit earlier on that it was an era between Bart and JP. Actually, it was all Dutch. It was all Dutch. It was the mistakes from two Dutchmen and finished by a Dutchman.
I'm not blaming Bart for this one. JP had plenty of time. We've seen them play that particular pass many, many times, and I think that JP just dithered.
I am giving Spurs the credit on this. So basically, that was a game plan to harry him,
Nah,
and
I mean,
basically.
JP could have got rid of that ball easily. He just dithered on it. And yeah, all right, Spurs did well to win it back off them. And I think if JP had then fouled him, he risked a red card. I'm not sure.
I mean, the
But.
way that Spurs won that ball back was very similar to the way that Kurumatoma did against Cole Palmer for Japan.
I fully agree. But what I'm saying here is that JP knows how to deal with that particular situation. And in this instance, he didn't.
He got his pocket picked. That's what
Yeah,
happened.
and he knows not to, and he knows how not to.
And I hope Bergvall did a great job with that. I think he did really well to win the ball fairly, and obviously the quality of the strike I just felt was I agree with you, Ali, in the sense that it was a really good move from Spurs to high press, win the ball, and finish quite amazingly the strike from Simmons. And we mentioned before the response of Van Hecht to know that he's made that mistake and to go up and get the assist for the equaliser.
I
Oh,
mean,
he'd have.
when Simmons scored that goal, though, the stadium did just completely and utterly erupt, and
It did, yeah.
we got to see happy Simmons. But it wasn't long before we saw very sad Simmons, and I'm here for that. I mean, he does sad so well, really, really well. And it's like, I mean, basically, the Spurs had used all their subs. I think he was a busted flush by that point, and he really wanted to go off. And they had to keep patching him up and keep going. But when Georgie did actually finish off that chance, it was
It was
just.
you felt it like a fan's reaction, didn't you? You felt he was pain. He was in a lot of pain with that. I think it was a pain, obviously, for the cramp that he was in, and obviously he wanted to be subbed, but also just the pure emotional turmoil of it. You think you're so close to your first win of the calendar year, and it's been snatched away from you, and you just think, what can we do to get a win? You do feel sorry for him a little bit.
Only a
Okay,
little bit.
but before we move on, I mean, I just want to talk a little bit about Jorginho. Obviously, it was a great finish for the goal. Let's go there. His form this season hasn't been great. In the press conference afterwards, Fabian addressed this, and it was very, very interesting what he had to say, wasn't it? You can't
Well,
remember, can you?
I wasn't there. I was actually being
Well, basically, what he was saying is that he knows he's been struggling, and basically they've been having conversations behind the scenes, trying to get the Georgie knows what he needs to do, he knows what he needs to get back, and he hasn't been featuring. He's not even really been coming on in games. So the fact that we got that cameo out of him at Spurs, and it was the Georgie that we've wanted to see all season. Was tantamount to what the work that's been the man management stuff that's been going on behind the scenes.
See, that for me is the if that was the case, see, that for me is the quality of a manager, of a great coach. Georgie knows he knows what Georgie can do. Georgie knows what he can do. He knows what every player can do. He knows what the qualities and the values and the resources he has to hand. But, it's one thing being a great player, it's one thing being a great teammate, it's one thing reading the game. But if your, as you say, form is shot, or your confidence is low, or basically if you are, how do I put this, you're human, these things happen, and sometimes people go on these runs, and that is where a good manager steps in and helps out. Yes, you can be a good coach. Yes, you can be a great tactician, but that's what the entire rest of the team is also for. And this is where I think some people still do have the mentality about what a manager is from the 1970s, where basically they acquire all the players, they sell the players, they pick the team, and they puff on their cigars. And of course, everything is totally different nowadays. And that, in that case, where the likes of De Zerbi and Potter and Hertzler are great, three great intelligent people, good man managers, who know how to get the best out of a player emotionally, intellectually, almost spiritually. And in that sense, you can see the effects of that, as you say, the 10-minute cameo that he had at Spurs, or however long it was, and the majority of the game that we had against Chelsea. Whatever it is, it's taken. Brilliant. Good for Hertzler.
Yeah, and Sam, also we saw De Zerbi take the flowers from our fans at the end of that game, and obviously there's still an awful lot of love for him. And it was such a lovely touch for him to actually do that. And actually, in the press
Was.
conference, in the press conference after the game, the way that he was speaking, I just find him inspirational, really.
Yeah, no, he is. He's got a way of words, has De Zerbi. And I think he puts reporters right. If you say something that he's not quite happy with, he makes sure to say no, he doesn't agree. He didn't agree that it was a mentality issue. And he basically just said the players need to come with him on the journey that they're going to be on to avoid the drop. And I feel I was a bit skeptical when they first got him in. I thought he's a manager with time. I think we'll do a great job with them. I just felt for a survival situation, I wasn't sure if he'd be able to do it quick enough. But from what I saw against Brighton, I do feel like they could have enough, and it would have helped Spurs the fact that West Ham didn't beat Crystal Palace. That would have given them a bit of a boost in that sense. Because at the end of the day, they're still in it. They've got Wolves next. They should win that. They're obviously already down, and I think it all could start with that. If you play like you did against Brighton, they're going to beat Wolves, I would say.
And don't forget, Spurs do have Chelsea before the end of the season.
Managerless Chelsea. You forgot to say.
Yes, and if Chelsea played like they did against Brighton, then I think Spurs could win that as well.
Exactly.
And Chelsea have still got an FA Cup semi-final this week. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it, really? But just sack your manager before a cup semi-final. Let's just casually do that. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Alan, this show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited.
I wish someone had told me that. I really didn't know. Head over to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, for all your floral tributes. Don't send any to Rosie, because that's just a really bad pun. Yes, flowers, champagne, chocolate, anything that says I love you very much, or I'm sorry, or I'm sorry for your loss, or so anything that you might want to present to a friend, a loved one, or even a hated one. If you tell them that you're an Albion season ticket holder, you will be able to qualify for a 20% discount. You can go there in person, or if you head to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. Like I say, they're at 175 to 177 Portland Road, and our very grateful thanks to Dave Costa at Flowers Unlimited for sponsoring the Albion Roar.
Absolutely. Now, literally the eagle-eared of you will have noticed that we had a competition running the last couple of weeks. We had Jim Daly, the Crystal Palace supporting comedian, came on the show, and he has got his show at the Comedia coming up on the 30th of April. Now, Jim kindly has given us a couple of tickets to give away for that, and we had a competition, and which was, what competition in Europe are Crystal Palace competing in this year? Snigger. And of
Compared to
course,
what
the
should they
answer
be?
is the Conference League. And we had the draw earlier on today. And congratulations to Steve Agass, who is the winner of two tickets. But thank you to everyone who entered. And look out for some more competitions coming up soon. So,
Well done, Steve. Nice one.
absolutely.
Should we just have 20 minutes of giggling now?
Well, we've done the double. How many doubles have we done this season now? I should have
I
worked that out.
think I think it's probably only about two or three now. I think we did. Forest was one. Brentford was one. I think this might have been our third. I could be wrong. I think it's three.
But it makes the aggregate score 6-1, which is all very, very nice. Sam, this game against Chelsea, it's certainly a candidate for the best performance of the season.
Yeah, I unfortunately wasn't there at the Amex. I was at a concert, which was bad timing because obviously the game was moved to the Tuesday night when I was really hoping it'd be on the Wednesday, but it was on the Tuesday and I unfortunately couldn't make it. But I was following along on the phone before the concert started. Saw most of the first half, and yeah, I was blown away really by Brighton's possession and kind of how much dominance they had over Chelsea, to be honest. And they just did not give Chelsea a moment to breathe, and the amount of chances they had, they should have been out of sight by half time. I can't believe that Jack Hinchwood didn't score. Carlos Vela put it on a plate for 2-0. That's one of the last things I saw before turning it off, thinking I really hope that doesn't come back to bite them. And then I was watching the highlights on the way home, and it really didn't come back to the bite them. They could have scored even more in the second half, and it was from pure utter domination from Brighton. And from everything I've seen and heard, Chelsea were as bad as Brighton were good.
I mean, bearing in mind just how incredibly bad his kicking was, I think it was 9 times that Robert Sanchez kicked the ball straight out of play
You
under
counted.
no
Well, to
pressure.
be fair, Bart did a couple of times as well, so.
But I mean, he was their man of the match by a country mile. I mean, that save from Mitoma, the identical chance to open the scoring,
Well, it was
it
one. I
was
mean,
just.
it was great. Oh, it was one for the photographers, because let's put it this way. He was almost in the same place as when he scored the Spurs goal, you know, sort of top right of the, well, near the top right. It's just, I don't know, wrong peg or something like that. He tipped a header from Hinshelwood over the bar as well. Yeah, brilliant with his hands, lousy with his feet. But I think that's kind of what we'd largely sort of come to accept from him. I think he was unlucky for the first goal. I mean, well, it did deflect. He didn't really stand a chance. Because other than that, he did have it.
Yeah, I mean that
But
was from the resulting corner from the Mitoma chance.
from
So,
the Mitoma chance, and the defending for that was just terrible. But you know, like
yeah.
we care. Yeah, I think I totally agree with Sam. We were brilliant. I mean, we've played really bad teams before, and we're back to the Palace game. We've played really bad teams before, and just not turned up. We've stunk the place out equally. But in this instance, and it's something that you mentioned earlier in the show, AD, is the return to form. Certainly, if short-term return to form, which I'm more than happy about, of Rutter and Belaiba. And let's face it, for me, if Belaiba is playing well, the rest of the team. And this is where I was talking about Gross or Milner feeling like they have to carry the midfield, because Belaiba has not been at his best this season. When he is at his best, and he was back to something near it in the Chelsea game, when he's playing well, the rest of the midfield and therefore the rest of the team really is cooking with gas.
Yeah, well, we saw Happy Carlos afterwards in the tunnel as well. It was, as, I, we haven't seen
His
the
bendy
beep beep
string
Carlos for a
dancing,
while,
yeah.
but it was absolutely wonderful. But I mean, that was amazingly for all the opportunities and the amount of times he's made the woodwork slam. That was 30's first goal of the season. He became the 21st Albion player to
You
score this
loved
season.
that stat, didn't you? That's
Well.
more than any other team, isn't it? I think I read.
I think some of them are in the cup as well. If you're talking about the league, it's probably still 15, 16, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, you've got Harry Howell in there in the cup. You've got
Have you got what? Did Watson
Tommy
score?
Watson
Yeah.
scored. Obviously, Babbies. Well, Babbies has scored,
No. I think in
and
that case, it might
Tim
be
has
as
the most
many
scored
as
in the league,
18
haven't
or
they? So.
19. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's we've only got about 15 minutes of this show left, and we could easily have a show on its own. But this is the kind of stuff that we were excited about under De Zerbi. I think possibly because it was a bit of a surprise. Under De Zerbi and under Potter, we'd have some good games and we weren't getting the results. And let's go back to January, February, where our run of form wasn't great. We were still playing okay, but we weren't getting the results. Now we've played a little bit better, not massively so. And I'm sure that Hertzler could actually, maybe next time you ask him, what is the difference between the results we're getting now compared to the results we were getting then? And it's not just the results in terms of the performance, but it's when those performances do turn in a really good result and a really good performance. You know, not say the performance itself. I mean, such a dominating performance. One also wonders actually that because we haven't played in Europe and the teams we're playing, a lot of the teams we're playing been playing recently have been, I'm wondering if there's some fatigue set in there. I don't know, but I'll throw that one out for consideration.
No, I don't think it's fatigue, but what I am seeing is the players are playing with a lot more confidence. Earlier in the season, I was criticizing them because everything was happening too slowly. The speed of passing, speed of thought just wasn't happening. But if you look at that performance last night, everything was bang, 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 zoom. It
Actually,
was.
it was once we were 2-0 up in the first half. I kind of thinking that, yeah, I mean, it was great that we scored, in the third minute and really set the cat amongst the pigeons. But I don't think that we played that quickly. But the thing is, it's not as though Chelsea came and closed us down. So we were still able to play at a pace that we dictated rather than just being crappily slow.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got to put the caveat in there that Chelsea were incredibly bad, but I
Yes.
mean the way that the movement off the ball, the way that they were fighting each other, the little intricate passes, it like that was De Zerbi ball basically. It was what we saw under him, and it was I was just absolutely
Yeah, but it wasn't
totally
deserving.
mesmerized by some of our movement last night. It was wonderful to see.
So were Chelsea, AD. So were Chelsea, which makes it all the better, and that's the more important bit. Yeah, I mean that it Chelsea helped us in as much as, but even again in the Spurs game, I saw them trying to do that. It's just the quality wasn't there. You could see the desire, you could see the intelligence in some of the passing. You just didn't see the qualities of it this time around. And again, probably because Chelsea were a much lesser side. A lot of the stuff that we're trying came off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Chelsea, though, isn't it? I mean, I mean, the atmosphere last night. I mean, it really was like it was a pantomime. I mean, it was literally who's behind you? Boo! I mean, the fact that.
Sam, what's is there? Is there? I mean, obviously, you go to the pressers here now. Obviously, the club have to be professional, but is there any kind of, I don't know, extra consideration amongst, well, anyone there that actually says, right, we're playing Brighton Old Boys tonight. We've got to get one over on them. Is there ever a kind of a feeling that you get of really, we really want to do this one? Or do they approach every game with a similar mindset?
It's a bit of both, I think. I think they do go into obviously every game, obviously wanting to win, but there is that extra edge. There has to be. I think it all comes from the fans as well. Every time I've seen Brighton play Chelsea, every single time, Caicedo, Cucurella, Sanchez, anyone touches the ball, they're on them, and especially Cucurella. Cucurella gets the worst of it, and it's always hilarious. And obviously, you hear some of the most obscene words that you ever hear at a football game when they've got the ball, and it is funny. And I think that just goes onto the pitch, and the players really get that, and they know the fans want to get one over, and because Chelsea are very quickly becoming maybe not as big a rival with Crystal Palace, but more of a kind of modern day rival in the sense that everything that's happened between the clubs and managers going there, players going there, and yet every time it happens, Brighton don't seem to have any. Don't get any kind of Chelsea don't get any better from it. They don't get any kind of
No.
edge against Brighton, and that's quite remarkable, really. That Brighton can keep winning these games and play Chelsea off the park in the manner they did, despite playing against some of the best players. And you just think how quality players like Caicedo were for Brighton and has been for Chelsea as well. We've seen glimpses of his best form in the Chelsea shirt, but the fact that Brighton can keep beating them in this manner, and I just think it all comes down to their identity. I think it doesn't matter kind of what players you have sometimes. If you all kind of follow one ethos and one identity, it can help you win games like this. And then Chelsea are lacking any kind of goal. I think I just don't know what I think for a number of years now. I don't really know where Chelsea have been headed. There's no real
Directions.
destination for them,
They're even
really. So.
dismissing their World Club Championship victory, the beginning of the season. They're even dismissing that now as just a sort of like a ridiculous pre-season tournament. Yeah, they were playing some decent sides, and João Pedro turned up there and immediately started pulling up trees. Good for him. But to actually be labelled the best club in the world, I mean, I think it's when we beat Chelsea last year. I think it was in the, I can't remember if it was the League or the Cup, one of the two. I couldn't tell you which. The Guardian was doing its live scrolling thing as to, the nature of the game. And actually, to be fair, they mentioned Brighton as opposed to most of the outlets not mention them. And yes, I am familiar with the fact of who we've got here. We've got a member of the media here. Is someone said, well, if Chelsea are the fourth best team in the Premier League, then I'm a can of tuna. It was just a lovely turn of phrase, thinking, yeah, pick a banal piece of food. That's how
I
bad
mean,
Chelsea were.
I mean, that whole tournament was just it was just like a glorified pre-season friendly, really, at the end of the day. I mean, FIFA coming out with all these grand statements. I mean, they're great. I mean, look who they gave the Peace Award to. But it's
Don't
like
even go there, mate. Don't even go there.
but
So
it's
let me ask you this. I'm going to really throw this one on you now, Sam, because and I think it's actually an unfair question. So I'm going to
I'll
ask it anyway.
hold my breath.
And given obviously you saw the highlights rather than sort of only part of the game, but certainly for the bit you saw, who was the best Albion player last night?
Best Albion player.
And actually, I'm going to throw that one over to you, AD, once Sam's answered his.
I think Kadioglu. And I think he I think he's been a quality player this season, to be honest. I think he's been like a new signing. Had that obviously serious injury and or serious injuries that kept him out for most of last year. So I think coming back this year, he's been like a new signing and he's played nearly every game. And I think I can maybe think one or two performances where he's not been kind of at least a six or a seven. He's just been really consistent. And as you mentioned, he's had some shots that hit the crossbar throughout the season and finally he managed to get on the score sheet last night and set the tone for the whole rest of the game, to be honest. And yeah, I saw that as it happened. I was watching it. Obviously it was straight after that Mitoma chance, wasn't it? Where it went out for a corner and then Pascal Gross, as you mentioned, covered every blade of grass, went over to take the corner straight away and Kadioglu did the job in getting Brighton underway, really. And I think that, yeah, as I say, set the tone for the performance. And I've been really impressed with him this season.
AD?
I completely disagree. I think like Furley's been absolutely dreadful all season. He can't play football. He's awful. And any team, like if anyone from Liverpool or anyone is listening, he's absolutely awful. He's
If you're going to mention a curse, AD, forget it. It doesn't
it's the
exist.
curse.
It's
The
not a
curse of
manager
the
of the
player of
month
the
course. It's
season.
not a player of the season
No.
curse. It's not.
No,
Sorry, remind
please.
me, like, what happened to last season's player of the season?
I can't remember who the last season's player of the season was, to be
He's
honest.
still here, isn't
Was
he?
it Van Hecke?
Yeah.
Van Dijk, yeah.
Well, he's going this year, isn't he? So,
Yeah, but that was last year, so.
but yeah, it is cursed.
Sorry, are you agreeing with Sam about the
I
best player
think
last
Ferdy
night?
was the instrumental. He's just been an absolute joy to watch all season. And like Sam said, he has been a new start for him this season. He hardly played last year, and when he was playing, he was playing with a bit of pain. Obviously, breaking your toe is a very, very difficult injury to recover from, particularly as a footballer, because your feet are constantly in motion. So,
Let me ask
I.
this. Go on. Let me ask this question. Was he signed as a specialist left back? Because he's
No, it
replaced the
basically
Kuiper, isn't he?
he's well, he can play there or midfield, and he has played he's played left wing at one point.
I think when he got injured against Liverpool, I think he was playing as a midfielder. It wasn't quite high up the
Yeah,
pitch.
but I mean, if you look at his performance for Turkey during the Euros, he was a marauding fullback. So basically, he was it was just like basically up and down that flank the whole time, and he's just a ball of energy and
So
like.
isn't this an interesting point here that we're saying that Kadioglu is possibly a midfielder and yet so is Wiefer and people are criticising Hertzler for putting Wiefer at fullback, but no one's said anything about Kadioglu. Don't get me wrong, he's done very well there, but no one's actually criticising the decision.
Well,
I mean,
that's because I think Ferdy is essentially he's a fullback. That is
he
his
certainly looks
position.
at home as a fullback, yeah.
If you look at his profile, that he will say fullback, but who can
Yeah.
also play?
Yeah, who
It's like I
is
mean, it's
another
like
right.
what I mean. What's Jack Hinshelwood's position? Come on.
Well, since he's moved to the quote number 10 position, he's had loads and loads of chances, and Jack Hinshelwood is what I call an intelligent footballer. There's too many players in that team that have a lot of skill and don't have the I don't think have the necessary in football intelligence. The right pass, the wrong pass, the short pass, the long pass, whatever it is. The only thing is that since he's actually moved to number 10, he clearly doesn't look like a natural forward player, and yet he is there getting the chances. But the chance that Sam was talking about that he saw of where Belieber set it up on a plate, the likes of Danny would have known, he's got the awareness, take the touch, smash it into the net. Whereas,
I think he
Hinshelwood
panicked a bit, didn't
one,
he?
he
Yeah, I
did
think
he
he
panicked,
panicked.
that's the right word, yes, he panicked.
Yeah, I think he
And
had more
scuffed
time than he
it.
actually realised.
Yeah,
Well,
I've done that
exactly.
plenty of times playing football. So I can't really judge, but
What,
yeah, he
missing
kind of
open
just
goals?
Yeah, exactly that. That similar thing where you just kind of you get the ball, you don't really expect it almost, and you just kind of rush it and you stretch for it. And yeah, he didn't set himself, did he? Bless him.
No.
But he did make up for it, and he did have the ball in the
He
back
did.
of the net. Now there was some question marks over this goal because I mean there was a handball in the build up which VAR dismissed, thankfully.
Well, the
But
referee saw it, didn't see anything wrong with it. His arm was in a natural position, and so play on. The Chelsea can whinge as much as they like. Doesn't make it controversial. It just makes them controversial.
I think it was the other way around, Al.
No, because not 2 minutes before that, I'm pretty certain Cucurella handled it in the box as well, and
Well,
gave us a play on.
that actually came off his shoulder. That was
Or
that's
was it?
a,
I'll let
that
you
was his
off then.
shoulder, yeah.
so but yeah, he made it, but it was a breakaway goal set up for him by Georgie, who's brilliant form in the last week or so has continued. He couldn't quite get on the score sheet himself, but he had a couple of actually. There was an effort in the first half where he just ballooned it over where he was actually well positioned. I think he took it on
The
his
thing
weaker
about
foot.
his assist for Hinshelwood's goal is that yes, he nicked the ball off the defender who was himself weak, don't care. And yeah, it was 2-on-1. Good for them. But I mean, I think a lot of people just play it, just play it. But actually, he did the right thing and, you know, advanced another 20 yards before playing it. Whereas I think actually, you know, there is an element of if he'd have played it immediately. That gives Hinshelwood everything, but all the while the defense has got to think of 2-on-1 rather than a 1-on-1. Then, yeah, Georgie did the right thing, played at the right time. You could see Jack holding his ground, holding his ground. That was actually two intelligent people who knew what they were doing. But the point is that I think the Georgie of even a month ago, I can't help thinking. I really don't want to sound this nasty. I think he'd have made a pig's ear of that, but this time around, got it perfect, and Jack stuck it away.
Did
It's all
and
about
that,
confidence, isn't it?
yeah.
Yes.
And well, I mean, we were saying, I can't remember if we were saying it last night, if we said it on the show or not, but we've been saying that since Hinch has been playing that more advanced role, he hasn't actually, he hadn't actually scored until last
No.
night, and he's had plenty of chances. And it looks like we know how good he is in the air, and it looks like they're trying to like tee him up for those headers. But so I think now he's got this one. I think he'll possibly finish the season strongly
I think
and get a few
breaking,
more. I
yeah.
mean he's now in double figures. That was his 10th goal for the club. He's been stuck on 9 for a while.
Okay.
But yeah, and it was good. And then of course old Father Time comes on, Danny Welbeck, and
Danny
he gets
Malbec,
his
please.
traditional injury time goal against Chelsea.
Yeah, that was again the cherry on the cake, wasn't it? And I was delighted because I put him in my fantasy team, and I saw him on the bench. I didn't panic. I thought he loves a goal against Chelsea. He'll come on and he'll score. And this is exactly what happened. He wasn't even on the pitch 10 minutes, was he, before he was putting in the back of the net? Yeah, he's got to go to England for the World Cup squad, I think. So Thomas Tuchel's got to get him in there. I mean, he's just been incredible this season. It's crazy to think he hasn't paid for his country since 2018, really, because he's just been getting better and better. Like, he's better now than he was when he last played for England, I think. So. Obviously, no English player scored more Premier League goals than him. And
No.
he's fifth overall in the Premier League and sixth in his last eight Premier League appearances against Chelsea as well. So,
Good
yeah,
stuff.
and his and his
Brilliant.
record for England is actually better than it, than anywhere else in his club career in terms of how prolific he was. It was like was it 15 in 40 games, I think it is, something
Something
like
like
that.
that, yeah.
But
Something.
it's incredible stats. But I mean, that is all we've actually got time for, unfortunately. So we're going to have to carry this on next week. And next, just before we do next week, it is going to be a slightly different show. It's the Reverbathon next week. We'll be coming to you live from the open market, and anything you can do to donate to this wonderful radio station is greatly appreciated. And if anyone wants to sponsor the show, please contact us at thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. But until then, thank you so much to Sam Morton. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been The Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye. We'll be right back.
can't help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answers that you want me to. Now when I talked to God, I knew he'd understand. He said, stick by me and I'll be your guiding hand. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.